This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
Okay, so for analysis on what's moving markets, we speak to Carlos Casanova, senior economist with private bank UBP, speaking to us out of Hong Kong. Good morning, Carlos. There are heightened concerns over China's property sector with another developer, Kazia Limited, having its credit rating downgraded recently. What further intervention can Beijing do at this stage to stem the bleeding?
Good morning. Yes, so we saw a little bit of downside risk there in the Asia sessions as a result of the ongoing pressures to the housing sector. What started with Evergrande's potential default has, as we have seen, spilled over to other names in the real estate sector. Despite Evergrande was able to evade defaulting on its payments twice in the last 2 weeks, we are seeing stress with some of the other developers that either have a lot of offshore debt, as is the case with Kaisa, or are smaller, so don't have the same access to resources as Evergrande has, and so are sort of going to inevitably become stronger candidates for default. So in this sort of environment, the PBOC has said that they will not do easing. They will not change their stance from the current cross-cyclical approach, meaning they will continue to maintain liquidity stable through injections in the open market, but they will not engineer an easing of conditions. The only thing that they have been doing is instructing the banks to continue to loan to developers. And then something which was actually quite helpful was for the first time they mentioned the three red line policy and what the central government believes should be the right approach to implementing the three red line policy, basically telling banks to that they might have overreacted by completely refusing to extend loans to developers that did not meet the criteria even before the deadline, right? So they have been using moral suasion to try to lessen the burden on the developers, but inevitably those that are under stress or smaller developers, because there's not going to be a change in the macro framework, those guys will continue to experience pressures and we will see further defaults in the remainder of the year.
Yeah, I think you should, because they seem to be holding the line. Because if we stick to China, Q3 numbers for GDP look pretty bad. The anticipations of it potentially contracting. What is actually happening on the ground there, Carlos? What is driving this weakness?
That's right. So in addition to all of the housing sector woes, and remember they're on the back of all of the regulation that has been implemented gradually since November last year. So we're in the midst of this shift in terms of the government priorities away from growth at all costs to this more balanced era of common prosperity. So all of that repricing is still taking place. That's of course striking on activity and sentiment, we saw that reflected in both consumption but also investment data in Q3. So in addition to these headwinds, which I think the market is sort of, I think, closer to being priced in, not there yet, but we are closer to pricing in these risks. In addition to that, you have, of course, COVID-related pressures. The country still needs a little bit longer to reopen. And so for the time being, they will continue to control the number of cases, which means that if there's an outbreak somewhere, they will lock down that city or that area to ensure it doesn't spread out to other parts of the country. And we saw outbreaks, of course, throughout Q3 in August in Fujian, August, September. And then there was a big one that started in Nanjing in the late summer as well. And that was significant because they had to lock up certain areas of Shanghai and Beijing as a result. It started in Nanjing Airport. And the government did say this week that they expect outbreaks to actually intensify and get worse over the winter period. So we do think that that's going to drag on activity and will keep sequential growth, meaning the quarter-on-quarter growth for Q4 flat, if not possibly negative. So we might see further weakness in Q4 because of this COVID effect. And that will extend into the Q1. And lastly, the last thing that is dragging, but I think that is not exclusive to China, of course, is rising energy prices, which have been leading to power shortages, which of course affect people's livelihoods, and all of that compounding with all of the risks is further dragging on activity.
Meanwhile, Carlos, how worried should we really be about supply chain issues when companies like Apple and Amazon reported results that were below expectations because of this issue? Is there going to be pressure on global growth then?
I do think so. I think it will, first of all, you know, if you don't have goods to sell, that's going to show in your earnings. So it does exert some pressure on earnings going forward. And of course, that implies some degree of downside risk for equities. So it will have a direct impact on markets. More importantly, however, it is unclear how big an impact this is going to have on global inflation. And as you have seen in the past few weeks, it is the hottest topic among central bankers in the world right now. So everyone from the Fed to the ECB this week, they were very clear about the three factors driving inflation in the European markets, seemingly a laggard now starting to also think about inflation. So the supply chain disruption, although it's temporary, might be serious enough to warrant a change in the pace of monetary policy normalization in some of the central banks around the world. So, of course, that could have implications for activity. So far, conditions have remained relatively cushy, relatively easy. But if we do have to resort to sooner than expected rate hikes, or if governments in Asia have to worry about outflows, and have to do interest rate hikes, then that, of course, could mean that we are going to have weaker growth, especially as we enter next year.
And surging oil prices seem to represent a threat to economic recovery in Asia. How vulnerable would China and Japan be to stagflation if, hypothetically, oil prices reach $100 a barrel? Is that something that you're factoring in?
Exactly. So the stagflation narrative sort of fits into the supply chain disruption and is something that has been discussed recently. In Asia, remember, excluding Malaysia, most countries are net energy importers. And so they stand to lose from a surge in energy prices. India is the biggest oil importer. So actually, I'm also concerned about Indian growth in case oil prices increase significantly. In Japan, of course, inflation, you know, it's oil prices will have a pass through onto inflation, but it's not something that worries the Bank of Japan, because core CPI, excluding food prices, was still very weak despite this increase in inflation at around 0.2% in September. So they still have a long way to go before they have to be in the ECB's position of discussing an imminent rate hike, right? In Bank of Japan, the target is 2%. So we still have a little bit of room to go. Japan has been in this sort of like low growth, low inflation environment for quite some time. So maybe a little bit of pressure on the inflationary front is not an issue. It is, however, more of an issue for China. So on the consumer front, because of that base effect on pork prices, remember last year China had African swine fever. So they had a supply chain disruption on pork. That's fine this year. So pork prices are in fact very low, and it's dragging on the consumer front of things. So we have very high factory prices, but we have very low consumer prices as a result of food. This is not going to be a factor that is going to support low inflation in 2022. So next year, unfortunately, PBOC has to contend with rising factory prices and rising consumer prices. Maybe they won't be as bad as factory prices right now because of the semiconductor argument, the energy argument. We are seeing producer price inflation at around 10%. Our expectation is that CPI will not reach that level, but it will increase above 2.5%. So, of course, we could be in a situation whereby they're trying to spur growth by increasing consumption, but sentiment remains very subdued because prices are increasing a lot compared to the year before. So that is definitely more of a risk for the Chinese economy and for Asian economies that might be exposed to Chinese demand.
All right. Carlos, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. Have a good weekend ahead. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP in Hong Kong, giving us just some takes on what's happening with markets and the kind of economic factors affecting how markets are reacting. Xiaoning, what were your main takeaways from this call?
the bad boy in the room is inflation. Everyone has to keep their eyes on that. That's probably what I think all central banks are really concerned about. This transitory thing, it's not happening. It's permanent, guys, and it's rising. I think that's the end of that's the big summary of Carlos's call.
That's right. Something that we're going to be keeping a close eye on, as always. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with the Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.